Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Are you tired of using Google Drive or Dropbox to send files to clients? Well, never get burned again with FilePass. I love and use FilePass exclusively for sending files to my clients. It's a cloud file sharing website specifically made by engineers for engineers. It's absolutely amazing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass to check out the full feature list and subscribe today. Never lose another dime to burned projects. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Lottery Lou.
Take a chance on me. Watch the riches come flowing.
Ooh, okay. Go off. All right. Let him cook.
Girl. Yes, girl.
Let him cook. Oh, what is it? Anyway, we're going to, lots of Gen Z slang. you're eating right now or whatever. You're serving.
Oh, it's giving. What is it giving? It's giving.
Giving lucky, dude.
It's giving me, yes. Sorry, y'all.
All right, sorry.
We're trying here. We're trying here.
That just got us our first one-star review on the podcast.
And I hope it's written in that context.
Y'all, please don't ever talk like that ever again. Okay, so we're recording the same day as the last episode. And we wanted to talk about how to compete and how to gain more clients by competing smart. Mm-hmm. And how to minimize the competition and how to stand out among competition as a business. So I don't want to call it how to make more clients, but how to be more receptive to them, you know? And this is kind of unrelated, but I'm going to try to talk about it to brag about it. But by the time we record the next episode, hopefully, if I've done well, if my training has allowed me to do it, the next time I record on this podcast, I will be an official ultra marathon runner, and I would have finished and completed 100 miles in hopefully 24 to 36 hours.
We're going to have to start calling you ultra marathon DK.
DK Goggins.
It's ultra the ultra DK. D.
I'm ultra D. DK ultra.
Ultra daddy.
Yeah. Ultra daddy. Anyway, the point is talking about competition. I think there's going to be something that I want to segue from that a little bit later, talking about competition, in a healthy, empowering way. So remind me of that if I forget, Lou.
Will do.
But, we want to talk about a few other things, and this is kind of off the concept of what we briefly touched on last episode. How to differentiate yourself from the competition. There's a lot of podcasts, YouTube videos, podcast episodes. This is a pretty heavily influenced from original Six Figure Home Studio, which is now Six Figure Creative, back when it was Brian Hood and Chris Graham together. This is a big thing. Let's talk first about recording studios, which may be unrelated to you, but I think with this slightly generalized concept of something that you may not do, you'll kind of have a better understanding of the concept. Okay. With a studio, typically it is you are unable to scale by location. For example, if someone lives 10 hours away by car to you, they are probably not your client, right? So you are pulled into the competition of the local area. Now you are only competing among, there's a few ways to compete. There's based on price point. Are you a intermediate or an entry-level studio? Are you a high-end studio? There's competition based on services. Do you offer drum recording? Are you unable to offer drum recording? Do you offer late night sessions or during the day sessions? Do you offer mixing along with the recording or producing along with the recording? These services, vocal editing, vocal coaching. Do you allow smoking? Do you not allow smoking? These are offerings and services that come into play. Now you can competing based on that. You can also even niche even more and compete on genre. Do you specialize in hip-hop vocals? Do you specialize in drum recording for rock music, right? Do you specialize in producing, right? So there's these different producing pop records and recording vocals, you know? So it's like, maybe you are a studio like that specializes a lot on real instruments versus synthetic, modern synthesizer, synthesis. I don't know, whatever. The point is, I could keep going on and on. But the point is, if as a studio, in order to survive, you have to think about why would anyone come to you versus another studio, right? And that means that usually it's based on differences. They come to me because I am the only studio in the area that has barbecue chips at the entrance, or I always bake fresh cookies with every session.
Man, I miss those cookies.
Yeah, I mean, there are studios that do that, right? Literally, yeah. I know that sounds silly, but that's one of the reasons where, like, we've had clients come from that studio and then come to ours, and they're like, oh, where's, like, the fresh cookies? And, like, we went to the store and got some fresh cookies, just so, you know?
Yeah.
Got some cookies for them. And it's these things, in order, you want to compete more. And the most important part is what you don't want to compete on. You never, ever, ever want to compete on price. And that only happens when you haven't thought about how else you're going to compete.
Yeah.
If the only reason why someone goes to your studio is because you are cheaper, that is the means of driving yourself into a hole. You're never going to be able to raise your prices because there's always going to be new studios, new competitors that pop up. Now let's take this into mixing. Lou, this is one of the David, so one of our former intern, David, I think he did the same thing for you where he asked for feedback on his website.
Yep.
Okay. This is very basic. And Lou, sorry, I'm ranting right now, but let me finish my thought here and then I'll have you chime in.
Okay.
But the feedback that I gave him on his website, I pulled it up. David, it sounds like he's going to go more for a mastering angle. So David Miller Masters or whatever, right? David Masters. And it was great. You can go in there. There's a contact form. But one of the biggest things that I had to let him know on is that this is a very non-personal site. I don't know what David looks like. I don't know who David is. I don't know what kind of music David works on. This website has gear on it.
Yeah.
Pictures of gear on it. But I don't know anything about David. It's a very non-personal website. And when you make a website that is very non-personal or your branding is completely non-personal, then what happens is you are not competing with anything other than price, which opens the floodgates. And now you're competing with everybody else on the internet, including those mixers on Fiverr that are anonymous and mix for $20.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you compete on price, that is a hole you do not want to dig. The reason why I get hired and I charge probably more than you listening to this podcast is not because I'm a better mixer. It's not because I'm cheaper. It's because I'm DK. And DK is reliable, replies to emails quickly, can do things quickly, has unlimited revisions. You know, has a great sound, all these different things. And I'm competing based on everything else, right? And that's the reason, because I have more streams or more awards or whatever, because DK was Billboard, whatever it is, right? Because DK is part of the Grammy Academy, doesn't matter. I can go on. The point is, I charge more because I'm competing on a lot of different things. And these things are thoughtful. And a lot of these things are choice-based. It's not like, you're right. Like, you can't be like Lou and have a gold record all of a sudden. That takes time.
Hey, but it wasn't all of a sudden.
I mean, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying is it took time. Like, it's not random. Like, that was, you can't just all of a sudden add that to compete based off of that. But you can compete off of being the one guy in the area that responds to emails in a timely manner. Like, that is straight discipline. Being the one guy that never misses any appointments. Being the one guy that is positive and good to be around. That's not depressing. Or maybe you want to be the one guy that is super depressing. And so you have a bunch of emo artists come in because they love that. I don't know. Whatever
it
is.
Oh, man. That would be quite funny. The market. Like, you're so depressing that emo people record with you. So that's so you double up the depressing in the room and record a really depressing song, and you're so good at being depressing. Oh my God, that's such a concept.
But the point is, I mean, we're just talking about a website now, but when you look at David's website, there's no pictures of him, there's no personality on that website. So now it's just price. There's no other reason to go on that website and hire David over anybody else on the competition because it's not personal. And this is called, and this is something we've talked about many times before, a white glove service. Every client that you take for mixing or mastering or producing is it's a white glove client. You don't go into the Honda dealer and buy a Civic. That's not a white glove service. What is a white glove service is Rolls Royce. You go in, you get to pick the color of the leather, the type of leather. Do you want the umbrella in the door or not? Do you want wood veneer, or do you want like what style of wood and color of wood do you want on the inside? Do you want the starry add-on? This car becomes a one of one for you. It's an individualized service. Typically, marketing firms are also white glove services. They find out the data for your website or for your service. They figure out where your target demographic is. They figure out your avatar, who you want, your ideal client, what that ideal client looks like. And we could talk about what it means to have an avatar. This is a practice that Lou and I have done a couple times now.
Yep.
Defining who the avatar is. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the more specific you are and understanding who you're, and there's a reason, I'm trying to break down the reason why so many influencers, especially for artists, talk about know your audience. Well, what the fuck does that mean? Like, the purpose of knowing your audience is to figure out how to better attack them. This is something so simple, but that most people get wrong. If you are an artist running ads on YouTube or on Instagram or Facebook, why the hell are you targeting other musicians? Other musicians is not your audience.
Yep.
It's not your audience. For example, one of my clients, Barely Human, Auditari, great example, right? Or Barely Human. If they were to run ads, their key demographic would be like 20 to 30-year-old video game, people that like video games, that specifically like Kingdom Hearts, right? That like artists like this, that probably go to shows and are keen on college educated. I don't know what it is, right? But the more specific you can get, the better the ad targeting is. And the more you can compete, the more effective it is.
Yeah.
The biggest mistake with the podcast, the podcast for me is a PR thing. It's to give credibility to me and Lou, right? But if I was to make a podcast in order to build clients, I should have made a podcast for people that would hire mix engineers, not for my peers. For example, the podcast, if I had the podcast for building clientele, I would make it how to write songs, how to record, and make it more recording production emphasis. And then the upsell would be I mix, right? But because I'm making a mixing podcast, it's more of a PR thing, as I'm leveling up my brand versus nobody that's learning how to mix or is mixing hires me. Like, the amount of clients that I get from the podcast is very far and few between, right? It's not a really a viable source of income for me from converting listeners to, because I'm teaching my peers. So this is the way that you need to think from a marketing perspective. Briefly, Lou, sorry, mm-hmm. I'm ranting now. So I want to turn the time over to you before I get insecure about talking too much on this episode.
Sure.
I want you to either talk about yourself or someone else that you've seen do a really good job on competing in the marketplace and finding their own lane, which for them or for yourself turned into a higher level of income.
Sure. I kind of want to touch on one thing as well, as far as pricing, right? We talked about competitive through pricing. It's not the way to go, but it is the way to go if you're the newest person on the block and you don't actually have a specialty, you don't actually have a lot of credits, you don't have much to show for. When we talk about the idea of competing through what we are known for in the brand that we have or that we're cultivating, it's kind of hard to start saying $500 a mix when you've only mixed like one album in the past and you just opened your doors.
Amen. This is a really good point, actually. Yeah. Keep going.
So you need to actually have a lower price point or do stuff for free at first. Get that reputation for the brand you're trying to cultivate and then force that brand as part of your financial pricing. You know,
go off, King.
Oh, yeah, daddy.
Go off, King.
So a good example of this is we've had many interns that have worked with us at the studio who, when they came in, they didn't know Pro Tools, or maybe they knew another DAW, but they didn't know the ones that we needed them to know. And I would always kind of push to the earlier interns. And I say that the earlier ones because it's kind of like the oldest child, youngest child kind of treatment, the way I ran the intern side of the studio. The early on interns got beat with the whip, and the later interns were just kind of like soft-handed, like, okay, guys, you know, try and practice, you know, do your thing. But those that really kind of heeded the warning of like, hey, make sure that you're consistent in what you're offering and what you're saying, because that will make you more money than the quality of your work. And oddly enough, most people didn't believe it. But once they saw it, dude, it really is like, just show up on time. Make sure that you're taking note of certain preferences. Like one of my clients likes a specific type of candle. So anytime I had one intern that would like handle like the bookings and prep them and all that kind of stuff, he would make sure that a certain candle was on the table, that four water bottles were to the left side, because they knew that the artist always sat on the left side of the credenza. And it's those little things that if you're opening a commercial space and you really want to stand out and you really want to start upping your rate, you have to kind of give them the experience that they believe is worth more than what you're charging them at that moment. So when your prices do go up, it's a justified increase in their budget, because they wouldn't want to go with somebody else in their price bracket, because guess what? You just upped the bar in that price bracket. That's how you get your money up. You know, that's what you want to do when it comes to getting your price up. If it's not currently up there because you can't compete on another level other than price just yet, then don't worry. Give it a year. And I say a year because in a year, you can work with a lot of people who will praise your name and you will build that social brand that is going to be worth more than what you charged that previous year. But you have to give them a reason to believe that you're worth more. And if you don't have anything to show for it just yet, don't worry. Just give it time. Now, with that said, I have seen people drop their price because of seasonal changes. And that I think is okay at the beginning point. I think it's the wrong move at a later point in your career. Now, I understand that a lot of people want to make this their 9-to-5 and this their only income. But it's dangerous to lower your price every season or whenever you don't have work. You can do it on a one-to-one basis. Like if somebody hits you up and says like, hey, I've only got this much budget to work with. And if you're feeling a little slow during that season, if you're feeling a little bit gracious and wanting to help somebody out because their budget just doesn't meet yours, you can do that. But publicly announcing things like that is also part of your branding. You are promoting that you have a discount at a certain point of the year. So it's not really worth hiring you out throughout the rest of the year, because your discount many times is seen as your real price. It's kind of like Black Friday deals. You wait all year long to buy a new TV because you know on Black Friday it's going cheaper. So you don't buy it throughout the rest of the year because you could save a couple $100. So if your price suddenly drops every November, December, January, whatever, guess what? There's no actual reason to hire you throughout the rest of the year outside of just demand being there. That's pretty much it. So part of the whole pricing issue is, as much as you want to raise your price quickly, just give it time, build that reputation, build a brand that's actually trustworthy and worth investing more into as the price goes up. But honestly, publicly showcasing a lower price point is kind of the wrong move unless you're hurting that bad. Humility is going to be a key factor in your price point. You have to know when you're charging too much and when you're charging too little. So take a little bit of pride into account.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Amen. Thank you. Yeah, these are all really great points. I want to go back and talk about what you talked about. Yeah, you're right. When you are just starting and you have very little experience and you don't know what you want to do. One thing, I'm never going to endorse forcing a niche. A niche usually comes to people and it takes time through experience. For example, people end up working on rock drums and that's their specialty because they love it. And with passion and love for a specific thing comes expertise and knowledge and sustainability. So that is important. Don't force a niche. I will never endorse forcing a niche. That being said, niches do come. Be aware of what you like, what you don't like. At the beginning of your career, maybe you say yes to everything, right? In order to figure out things that you do like or things that you do well. I used to be an artist and I found out that being an engineer was significantly more cathartic than writing music, right? Yeah. And then that turned into, I thought mixing is more fun than recording emotionally and monetarily, like for money-wise and emotionally. Recording was boring and sometimes, and I would get frustrated, but with mixing, I never got frustrated, never got boring to me. It was cathartic. And I'm not saying that that's how it's supposed to be, but everybody has different things that feel easy, that come naturally. And as you're with experience, you'll recognize those things. Another point that I want to make is you're exactly right, Lou. Like the idea that if you have very little else to offer, instead of lowering your prices and discounting them, there are many different ways to compete without. And we briefly spoke on this, but I'm going to reemphasize this point is there's many ways to compete with very little experience. For example, service, right? And you mentioned that. Providing service, whether that's through communication or amenities. Service is something that is a choice. Discipline, yep. Reliability is also a choice. This is practice. This is a choosing to respond to phone calls. This is not necessarily a healthy thing, but if you are the guy that is able to respond back and turn around projects at 9 p.m. at night or 4 a.m. in the morning, you know, you're willing to do late night sessions. This is where we kind of go into, I feel like at the beginning of the career, you need to figure out what boundaries you have. But we had an episode about the importance of lowering boundaries, especially towards the beginning, and figuring out what your boundaries are. Eventually, you're going to have them in order to have a sustainable career. Again, say yes to everything until you can figure out where those boundaries are. And you're going to have to keep in mind that the more boundaries you put up, the the more things you're going to have to say no to, which is difficult. Yeah. Okay. I think that's really, really great. Really fantastic so far. Let's move on into the idea. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think there's one slight thing we can touch on, which is competing because you have to by financial force, meaning that you dived right in. You don't have any other job. You're just doing this. You're taking every job you can say yes to because you have to. You have no other choice. It's okay to have a 9-to-5 and do this on the side and focus on building the brand with the type of artists and the type of relationships that you're looking to nurture versus allowing anybody and everybody through your business that you're not exactly looking to work with long term. It's okay to build your credits up and try to get as much work as you can done. But it's kind of like what DK has said in the past, which is don't raise a child you wouldn't want or whatever. I don't know. People don't throw their kids away, but you know, as much as you'd like, sometimes you can't throw your clients away because you're financially restricted to the clientele you have for now. And that's making you lose opportunities of working with the people you actually want to be around. Giving yourself some financial freedom at the starting point until you can make that big jump is probably the best advice I can give you as far as competition. Give yourself a reason to say yes to the projects you're intending to work on, no to the ones you're not intending to work on. Just do that. Just focus on making sure you're building the right brand with the right people. But if you put yourself in a situation where you have to say yes to anything and it's every Craigslist artist, every Facebook marketplace booking and all that kind of stuff, I can tell you time and time again, the hardest I don't even want to say it like that, but the most difficult situations the studio has been in when it came to experience with clients has usually came from like shady booking sites and things of that nature where things were just cheap and, you know, they were available right here, right now. Oh, no smoking allowed in the studio. That's an issue. You know, there was always some kind of issue with these like lower bar clients. These weren't the people we're necessarily trying to book and be not necessarily. We're not trying to say we're not trying to associate with every artist that comes to the door. But obviously, if we're trying to offer a white glove service, we want clients that are looking for white glove service, not just looking for a cheap deal.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to briefly touch on the concept of an avatar.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, that ties into it.
Yeah. And building an avatar, creating an avatar is partially a manifestation of who you want. Like, I want to work with college-educated men or women or singers versus
dogs,
saxophone. Yeah, dogs versus, like, I want to do children's music. I don't know. I want to work on video game composing, right? And part of it is, like, manifestation of, like, saying who is your ideal client that you want to work with in order to adjust your competition or how you compete in the marketplace, your marketing. But it's also of a way to figure out who to say no to.
Yeah.
And it's there's a lot of workbooks, PDFs. Just type in creating an avatar PDF on Google, and there's a ton of websites that have a printable PDF that has an exercise where you create an avatar. And I know this sounds really weird, but when you're creating an avatar, you want to be as specific as possible.
And be as honest as possible.
Yeah, maybe you are a vocal producer and it's like, my ideal avatar this is really weird, but like a Hispanic lady named Susan who is 33 years old. We are doing some sort of Latin-based vocals and she likes to be likes to have feedback. She is college educated, is classically trained, likes to work during the day. Maybe she is a mother. And that's important to me. She's only like, she's very focused. And when she's there, she'll be there because she's a mom. Her hobby is painting because I want artistic types. Like it sounds really strange. Though watch any sort of YouTube video on how to build an avatar. The more specific you can get in this example, the better it is. And again, with every sort of influencer on about music, it's like, know your audience. The reason why you want to be very explicit and specific about your audience is now knowing how to attract those people to you. and how to cater to them.
Yeah.
Because you want to have a level of practical empathy where you're not competing. Your music is not meant for the entire world. You're delusional if you think everybody will like your music. Okay.
Jake McCallier.
Yeah, yeah. No, he doesn't say that. But I mean, like,
yeah.
Oh, he did say that actually, huh? Anyway,
he says he makes it for his audience. Yeah.
Yeah. But the point is, if your audience is people that play Deltarune on PC with a Windows, and you can get it that specific, that's only going to help you. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, I only want to target people that have watched
Demon Slayer's latest season.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese films, or watch Tokyo Vice, or subscribes to HBO Max. If for some reason you can figure out that that's who your target demographic is, that's only going to help you. And I know that sounds silly, but you do want to cater to a very specific niche audience. So it's this combination of your finding how general you want to be versus how specific you want to be. And typically in advertising and marketing, the more specific you are, the more effective each tactic plan. The execution of a plan is okay. The last thing that I want to talk about, Lou, and we're going to kind of generalize here, and we're going to finish up this episode. Is I said that I would segue about the running thing, and this is going to be really important. And this goes along the lines with competing your way into high achieving. So this is a lot of different thoughts, and I'm saying this out loud. I'm thinking out loud here. So forgive me if I'm not articulating or if I'm missing things or it doesn't make quite a bit of sense. It doesn't make perfect sense. But I am noticing a couple things with high achievers. If you are the type, first off, like Lou said, we're going to start here. Like Lou said, if you never want to be financially burdened, it'll put you into stressful situations where you start being rude to people, where you start accidentally ripping people off, all in the name of being able to pay rent. You never want to be so financially in need that you have to take whatever you want. You know, in order to say yes to $1 million project, you have to say no to a $500,000 project. You know, like, you have to be somewhat financially stable. I would say 95% of people across the board. And I don't want you to think this is the Dunning-Kruger effect. If you think you're the type of person that can do this, you're probably not. Statistically, you're not, okay? I would say 95% of people, even listening to this podcast, should not try to make a living off of music and throw everything else out the door. Live with mom and dad, not get another job, just try to make music work. 95% of people, that is dumb, and it ends up being detrimental. Now, the 5% of sometimes, every once in a while, this is very rare, and Lou and I happen to be these people, right? Is you'll find out of 100 people, 5 people are so fucking driven that you need to move away from home. You need to not rely on another sense of income. Potentially, this is so dangerous. And the reason why I don't recommend this is potentially the being chased after by student loans, and the fear of having to pay that off puts people, hyper-focuses people. You burn all the boats like the Cortez story, hyper-focuses the very few and select and turns them into ultra-competitive players of the game, right?
Yeah.
I want to be clear, 95 to 99% of you, that is the worst advice I could possibly give you. You have to be a freak of nature. It typically comes from high levels of torment and abuse from parents. Like, that's like, and not turning to the dark side and making fun of other people. Like it usually comes from a dark place.
Like, the way I've usually seen that and explained it is, like you said, not for everybody does that work. For me, I like the pressure. I like a challenge. But a typical 9-to-5 does not work for everybody because it releases that sense of challenge, that sense of, like, you have to push, right? Because you have a comfortable paycheck. You know you don't have to push as hard. you know that you can wait for the right client, but it's the same notion of like, look, let's make 1,000 mistakes right now. You know, right now that we have the opportunity, that's why I always told the interns, do everything you can think of right now. Right now that that pressure is not there, try to learn as much and try to expand as much as you can. Because once it hits, it's time. There's no mistakes. You can't make any mistakes anymore. You have to move.
Yeah. Most people that want to start a successful YouTube channel just sit around not knowing what to do. And then they'd be like, someone needs to teach me. I need to learn how. They get like preparation anxiety and they're like, I don't feel like my videos are good enough. Oh, and maybe they're just not smart or talented. It doesn't matter. The point is for most people don't know or aren't willing to go through complete bullshit to make a successful YouTube channel or to do well as an engineer. And here's the thing. And this is where the cognitive dissonance, the cognitive bias, the Dunning-Kruger effect, which we've done an episode about that. Search it. It's like one of my favorite episodes. And this is super important. If you think you are that guy, you're not. I'm telling you right now. And this is like one of the few times that I'm trying to save your ass. But if you really are one of the 1%, the 1-5%, and you've burned all your boats, you have no other choice. And when everything is on the ground, you can figure out a way through. You're willing to bet on yourself. I do think not living with parents, moving away, risking it all is a fantastic way to stimulate growth. Not recommended, but that is, yeah, not to the general. I can't recommend that to the general.
Yeah, to be honest, when I technically recorded the record that got me my plaque and stuff, we hit Billboard number one and stuff like that for that record in the R&B charts and all. That was in a staircase closet recording and all that kind of stuff. I was still living in a one bedroom apartment and everything, literally having to drive, I think it was like 1 hour and 20 minutes to my client every time I was doing a session. Like, if you're motivated enough to go through the pressure of it all and just do your best with what you got, you will do fine. You don't have to worry about like, but I'm not at record plan. I'm not at Paramount. I'm not at this. It's like, shut the fuck up and just get to work. Literally over time, everything will pan out. Like, if you haven't noticed, me and DK both work from home and we're doing just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was meant to like.
To be honest, for me, it's like, I just never enjoyed the excuse of like, oh, but you know, I'm not as successful right now. I can't charge these numbers because I work from home.
Yeah, but we are in LA.
Yeah, we're in LA, sure. But even then, I would argue that if you built the right brand, most studios are moving to homes.
Yeah.
We've seen it. Even at the top of the list, Tizio has been working from home this whole time. Yes, he gets paid to go. Yeah, exactly. Like, if mixing is part of your goal list, then there's that. Mastering engineers are moving to homes as well. You've seen where, like, some guys still want to have a nice professional room to work out of, and they build it in their backyard. That's kind of the big point I'm trying to make. Like, don't make the excuse that I don't have the resources or that I don't have the big flashy studio with a nice parking lot and entryway. To be honest, it's not the only reason people are going to work with you. The majority of the reason they're going to work with you is because you provide something that they're looking for and they like working with you because your consistency is something that they're after.
Yeah. I do want to be clear. The problem, and we've had episodes about this again, the dangers with excuses is that everyone around you almost always will validate them for you.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be PC or non-PC here, but like, yes, if you think everybody is racist against you, then they will be. And that is always going to stop you. You have to let go. You have to be courageous in the sight of potential racism or potential poverty. Or like, I came from a poor place. I believe that everybody that's wealthy is gatekeeping from me. Well, if you think that, they will. And every excuse that you make will be validated by yourself and by those around you as long as you let them.
You know, it's kind
we're
of
not
funny.
Gonna go off. We're not gonna go. Go ahead. Say that. This is a tangent that I'm not trying to get into. But
No. But there is one thing you said that it does relate to how this industry works, which is if you think everybody that is of a certain class is keeping you out of that class, it's really yourself keeping yourself out of that class. A good example of this, shout out to Greg Wells, super dope producer and engineer. But he made a post recently about how he posted something just stating his own opinion, and somebody kept progressively getting more aggressive throughout his comment section. And, you know, the guy's like, oh, my God, I can only imagine you and other, you know, successful named person being in the same room. Oh, the steam coming out of that room must be so blah, blah, blah. You know, no wonder you're surrounded by blah, blah, blah. And he literally just responded. He's like, this is the reason why your imagination of said room is the closest you'll ever be to that room. Like, you're keeping yourself out of this by acting a certain way and treating others a certain way. Like, don't be that person. If you want to be part of the successful people, then you have to move like the successful people versus just criticizing and just blaming them.
Yeah. Also, that does that confidence, that totally internal confidence, does come from experience. It's not something, some people are delusional enough. And I hate to say it, but those that are, the very few that are like psychopathically delusional about their own talent is, can be successful.
Yeah.
But most normal people, you have to work and prove to yourself that you belong at that level.
Yeah.
And those are choices that we can all make on a day-to-day basis. And if you are in a place where you have a hard time committing to doing high-quality work, it's usually comes from a place of you need to start taking care of your life at a lower level first and build your way up. If all you can do today is just make your bed, then that's all you can do, and do that. If all you can do today is take a shower, you know, whatever. Everybody's at different mental places, but your confidence in yourself and the ability to work with others and believe that you belong in different places starts small and builds up. Mm-hmm. So don't, wherever you're at right now, yes, it's going to take years. For someone that's really exceptional and got lucky, it might take a year or months, right? But almost always it takes a decade. And that's something that you need to be totally aware of. Okay, the last thing I was going to say is with high achieving, I think this is the final secret. And this is the secret that you'll hear every single, like Mix with the Masters, every single high achieving engineer ever talks about the secret with mixing. It's all this. Part of the reason why I'm able to develop mental fortitude to run 100 miles, for example. So this is what, going back to that. I thought everybody that, and this is normal, and I promise you, you've thought this if you've heard me talk about this 100-mile race. I'm going to run this 100-mile race, and I'm going to tell people that don't know anything about me that I've ran a 100-mile race before. The first thing that they're probably going to think is, what's wrong with you? What sort of trauma are you trying to get over? What are you compensating
for? What are you running from, DK?
Yeah, what are you running from? And at first, that was true. At first, that was true. But I don't think running away from myself has been the biggest motivator to wanting to do something like this. And whether or not I'm able to finish, I'm praying that I don't get injured on mile 80 or something like that, right? And be able to not finish. I'm hoping that I can finish. So like, knock on wood, right? But the last piece of the puzzle with high achievement, and you'll notice this, regardless of trauma, regardless of, location is important. You got to be in LA. You got to be in New York. You got to be in Nashville. You got to be in Atlanta. Like, You got, if you want to do high, by the way, making a living versus excelling in the industry, totally separate things. You can make a living without any major credits.
And you can excel without making a living.
Yeah. So,
it's a crazy concept, but it's possible.
So, yeah. But if you want to like compete in the industry, you have to move to a major, like you do. Like, don't listen to anybody else that says you don't have to. The exception for the rule is so small that it's probably not you that they're talking about. Okay, so going back to this, the last piece of the puzzle that I think is very important in order to compete and do well and to compete in the industry is, nobody ever talks about this, but the industry is a little bit like a last man standing kind of thing. People retire, people pass away, people get old, people get sick. Slowly, one day, Dave Pensado is not going to be able to mix, and all of his clients are going to go to Jason Joshua or somebody else, and then Jason Joshua is going to be. It usually trickles down. So it's. I hate to say it, and it's not necessarily true, but it feels like a last man standing sort of industry, especially if you are living in the right places, like in LA. And the last piece of the puzzle, And the reason why I think I'll be able to run 100 miles and why I was able to train for it, I was able to do back-to-back marathons. I ran 52 miles in 24 hours just for the training part. Part of that reason, and the biggest reason, isn't compensation. It's not, I know I touched on trauma and stuff. At the end of the day, it's almost always we have learned to just fucking love it. That's it.
Yep.
When you niche and you build boundaries and you learn to love whatever craft that you niche into so much that all of a sudden writing emails is no big deal. It's not a big deal because I get to mix. And I think that's the most important thing. I can run 100 miles and train for the 100 miles because I love to run. I also might love personal competing with myself, but to see if I can do it, like challenging. But I, at the end of the day, like to run, love to run. It's changed my life. It got me out of depression. And it's the same thing with mixing. If you want to compete at a higher level, you have to compete in a way that's healthy to you at the end of the day, in a way that you can come back into the studio every single day and say, I love this shit. And the last thing that you want to do is, in the pursuit of a career, work in such an unhealthy, unsustainable way that you end up resenting the one talent, skill, hobby that you used to love so much. At the end of the day, everything that we do, the reason why you compete on different things, the reason why you set boundaries, the reason why you stop doing things, that you do things, you chase after things, the reason why you lower boundaries is, at the end of the day, to emphasize your love for the craft. I think that's the secret. What do you think, Lou?
I think it's true. To be honest, the people around you will know when you actually enjoy what you do or how much it means to you to actually continue doing something. I've told you in the past where I've told Anna, like, oh yeah, I'm thinking about just getting like a little part-timer and this and that here and there just to kind of help out with a few things. She's like, no, that doesn't feel like you. No. Like, other people will know who you are by the way you present yourself, the things that you do. Even running the 100 mile, if you were to talk to DK and he not bring up the 100 mile, you would still know he's a 100 mile type of guy, if that makes sense.
Oh shit, I'm blushing.
Oh, you son of a bitch. Don't make me blush. How dare you? But that's what I'm saying. Like, I laugh when people say they're scared of me. One, because fuck yeah, be scared of me, bitch.
Sorry.
No, but it's funny to us because I'm always like, dude.
Somebody be scared of me, bitch.
But it's like, honestly speaking, like, I'm the type of person to give, even if I have no reason to, even if it's not in my benefit. One of the best advice and worst advice I ever got was, when you're looking to succeed, don't do favors. I understood what they meant because I know the type of person I was speaking to. Now, to most people, that might sound like, hey, it's all about you. It's all for you. Don't worry about anything else. It's like, no, listen. You can do favors all you want. You're going to get burned here and there. So if you're going to do it, just understand the likelihood of you getting burned is high. It's really high. So you have to do it out of love and not just because you're trying to do a favor. Don't do it because you think they're going to give you something back. Don't think of it as something to expect in return, right? You can tell a person's type when you meet them. Anybody that's ever worked for me has never been scared of me. No, nobody's ever looked at me and been like, oh my God, Lou's going to kick my ass. Oh, he's such a mean guy. I do favors all the time, but I also understand that I expect nothing in return. If I got something out of return, it's honestly a fun little surprise to me. But that is what I mean when you say that Deke is a 100-mile kind of guy when you meet him, because for some fucking reason, if you get the wrong picture of me, then you're scared of me for some reason, and me and DK are laughing at you. You know, That's the reality. So, like, honestly speaking, like, you fall in love with what you do. If you love what you do, you love to teach it, you love to help others, and you actually strive to do more, and that will show in your work. That's why I say these things. It doesn't matter whether we announce it or not. It doesn't matter if you put it on your website or not. The moment you get an opportunity, the door has opened, but that door will not stay open if you are not about what you preach, and it will show right away.
Yeah. I think the best thing in A&R, the people that are the interface between artists and labels, A&Rs love a mixer that loves mixing.
Yeah.
They're really nerdy about it. They care about which compressor sounds better. They love that. They don't relate to it at all. They think mixing fucking sucks. And it's, I don't know why we have the budget for this. It's horrible. I hate that we have to do this, but this is part of the process. But when they have to hire someone, they want someone that is really nerdy and does nothing else. They know that they're going to get the best work done. So when you hire, when an A&I hire a mixer, it's not that because they do good work. It's because they trust that they do good work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If I love my craft and I'm really nerdy about mixing, and you can tell, that builds a lot of trust for someone that doesn't understand the craft. And people that hire you typically are the ones that don't understand the craft. They wouldn't hire you if they were trying to do it themselves, you know, if they did understand the craft. So enthusiasm goes a long way. And I think that is actually one of the things that one of the major A&R that has made me thousands of dollars to this day is like, has talked about. It's like, DK, I knew that you were good because you're really fucking nerdy about this. Like, you're really into this. And he also said the same thing about, like, he used it in an example of keyboards too. It's like, the fact that I was so nerdy about mechanical keyboards, he's like, oh, like, if someone's going to make me a keyboard, I want you to make it because it sounds like you really know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So if I ever, and that's the thing, like, and I got him a keyboard and he loved it as a gift. So it's just, at the end of the day, regardless of everything, it's important to stay passionate and to preserve, protect that endearing passion that you have, that childlike passion. All right. And on that note, we hope that you compete. In order for us to compete in this podcast, please leave us a 5-star review. That differentiates us from other podcasts. More 5-star reviews, the betters. And that goes on Apple Podcasts. Google Podcasts is no longer, it's shut down, but Apple Podcasts and Spotify, if you're listening on either of those are the two biggest platforms that I'm seeing in the analytics, please leave us a 5-star review. And if you're on Apple, just say a sentence. These guys are silly. 5 stars.
DK if you add a sentence, 100-mile guy. You're scared of Luke? Good. Be scared of him, bitch.
5 stars. The reason why is if you leave a written review on Apple, the platform values that a little bit more and feeds the algorithm a little bit more. It's a free way to support us. Thank you so much. We hope that you continue to build your career, to increase your passion, to level up your skills. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.